Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders on Broadway and on the nominations list for the 2022 Tony Awards. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the ensemble of performers who play the six thoughts in A Strange Loop, the musical that's leading the Theater Awards season race this year with 11 Tony nominations. With book, music, and lyrics by one of my guests on a previous episode of Stagecraft, Michael R. Jackson, A Strange Loop is about a young black gay man writing a musical about a young black gay man writing a musical. And on stage, all of his conflicting thoughts, desires, ambitions, and self-loathing are depicted by a tight ensemble of six performers, each of whom gives a unique, distinct performance that's full of individuality while also working together as a dynamic, seamless whole. Among the show's 11 nominations are featured performer nods for John Andrew Morrison and for L. Morgan Lee, who's become the first openly transgender performer to be nominated for a Tony Award. Now, here in the virtual studio with me to tell their individual and collective stories are Morrison, Lee, and the four other performers who make up A Strange Loop's ensemble. That's right, we've got all six of them all at once. It might be chaos, but it's gonna be fun chaos. So buckle in and join me for a kiki with Antoine Hopper, James Jackson Jr., L. Morgan Lee, John Michael Lyles, John Andrew Morrison, and Jason Vesey. Hi, thoughts. Thanks for joining me.
Hello.
Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Gordon.
So we're recording this episode a few days before it comes out, and for you right now, it is at the end of what I'm guessing has been a pretty wild week for you all. It started with, you know, at 9 a.m. on Monday morning with, you know, the show you're in getting 11 Tony nominations. Tell us a little bit about kind of what the week's been like for you. How y'all doing?
I'm exhausted.
I'll start. Sure. I mean, the week has been crazy. I mean, if we're being very honest, I got a very bad sinus infection this past weekend. So Monday morning, we get the nominations, which were crazy. And I was screaming and crying all morning and falling apart.
Yes, congratulations, El Morgan, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we get back in, do the show on Tuesday. Wait, did we do anything on Tuesday today? I forget. It's all starting to blur together to me right now. Yesterday we had a mammoth day where we started the day with started the day for a few of us with like the meet the nominees situation that happened, where it was like this huge press junket, and then ran straight from there to all of us had to sound check at Seth Meyers, and then ran from there to I spoke on a panel with some of the touring roadshow Broadway League folks, with the writer of Thoughts of a Colored Man and another playwright named Larissa, who wrote the Thanksgiving play. So we did that panel, ran from that panel back to Seth Meyers to tape Seth Meyers. And then and then came back to the theater. So because I was still suffering with the sinus infection, I was out yesterday. But everyone else's day continued on to also have to do the show on top of that. It's like the week has been nuts because we're doing so many things during the day, like full day schedules, and then having to add the show, the 8-show week on top of that. So it's like
we're doing a lot of things other than the show.
Yeah, and tell us more about that, James. What's the how do you then summon the energy to then do the show?
I will let you know when I find it. I don't know. It's like adrenaline is a thing. Rest, I hear, is a thing. So maybe one day that'll be added to the medication I'm taking. But I don't know. I think it's all adrenaline right now. It's all keeping us going. It's really exciting stuff, and it's really cool stuff that we've never gotten to do before. So to get to do it is really this cool, lovely whirlwind blessing thing. But my bed was so comfortable this morning in a way that it hasn't been. And it was just like, oh, I could stay in this. I really could just lay here. There's no need for me to get out of this thing. And yet I'm out of it. I don't know, it's all adrenaline, but it's good adrenaline. Blessed good adrenaline.
I will say I have never watched the Tony announcements before. They're at like 9 a.m. Like I've always watched the Tony Awards, but the announcements, I didn't know that was a thing until I watched Smash for the first time during the pandemic, because that's, I guess, what everyone did during the pandemic. And I was like, that's how I learned about it. And I was like, wait, the Tony announcements are a thing? So I like, even though I should have like kept sleeping, I like had my phone by my bed and I was like, okay, I'm going to set my alarm for 8:55. I'm going to like roll over and just watch from my phone. Mm-hmm. But I like woke up and then I was just like really excited. It was like giving Christmas morning. So I just like ran to my living room and like put it on the big screen and was just sitting there. And it was just like, what? It was like maybe 15 minutes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so quick and so bizarrely local and small. Yeah. But
I never
so
watched them either. They didn't pertain to us. I didn't.
Like, there's no way that many people tune in. It must be like 100 people.
There were 4,000 people. No, there were 4,000 people on when I got on at 8:55.
4,000.
They're usually a little bit more formal, where someone's in front of a camera reading names. This felt a little scripty in like a moment.
It was totally scripted.
More than any other situation. Usually it's just kind of like, here are the names.
It's also so crazy. Right. I'm also like, it was only 15 minutes. But like, there was so much emotion packed in 15 minutes. Like, my neighbors was like really attacking me. I was screaming and like crying and howling. Like, it sounded like
I was trying to be...
There was shouting
about it, and it's like, I'm not going to watch. I'll wait and hear what happens later. And it was like my spirit at 8:30 was like,
how long did that last?
Literally at 8:30, my spirit was like, get out of this bed.
It was really cool. It was very cool.
Yeah, I was just going to ask what it was like hearing the words "A Strange Loop" and for some of you, your names, and in the announcement.
It was awesome to, like, it's in so many categories, I knew so many people. So not even just our show. It just felt like, oh my God, all of these people who've been in this business forever, I'm watching this thing that I've never watched because it has in no way ever pertained to me. And I'm hearing the show I'm in. I'm hearing friends of mine. I'm literally hearing, like, hearing dreams come true. Was like... So it was like a constant screaming and a lot of crying. The dog was going crazy. There was a lot going on, but it was really such a thrill to see so many names in so many categories, not just our show even. It was just like so many people that I couldn't believe I knew someone, multiple people in every category that was being mentioned. And that was such a really cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Jason.
I definitely only woke up to hear our show. I didn't really care about anyone else. Full disclosure. And I didn't. And but I actually woke up to watch it because I kind of assumed or hoped upon hope that the show and lyrics and things like that would happen. I truly woke up to hear to hear two names, and I'm glad I did. That's the only reason why I woke up at that time. I was just crossing fingers and hoping and ready to rage if one of them wasn't nominated, and they both were. So I was thrilled about that.
My tears first started when they said John Andrew Morrison. Mm-hmm. That's when I
same.
Lost it.
Same.
Because I've been like, just like, it's like one of those things where it's like, it's like, it's how do you say it without sounding like snooty about your show? But like, I
know
like
you
we
just
sort
say
of
it.
Knew that the piece we're doing is good. And we sort of expected almost that like the show itself would be received in a certain way. So like, it wasn't a surprise when, you know, Michael was nominated for like, you know, music and like that was not the surprise. It was but truly when they got to John Andrew Morrison, that's when I was like, oh my God, this is, and then like only minutes later, I saw the L pop up and then I screamed and like, thank God it was me and not somebody else. Cause that would have been a really awkward moment.
Laura
Osnes. I want to call Laura Benanti and be like, hey girl.
I mean, but the thing is, Gordon, too, specifically, if I can call out John Andrew Morrison, I don't know one person who, when they joined the show or the production and heard or saw John Andrew Morrison do that number for the first time, didn't think.
Well,
okay.
You've been telling me I was going to get a Tony nomination for 5 years.
So that's why this motherfucker owes me money now.
You've been saying it for years. I honestly was like,
yeah, you owe me money.
Okay, it's coming. I really didn't want to hope too much it. I really didn't. And I was like, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And all is going to be. And my friend Tom, I have a friend Tom who's just very, very wise. And the day before, he was like, hey, baby, it's okay. You're going to be okay if you get it. You're going to be okay if you don't get it. And it's okay if you want it. And I was like, oh, and at that moment I was like, I think I want a nomination. And so, you know, the whole thing of like, oh, I'm not going to watch this. I'm going to play it cool. Like my spirit then at 8:30 was like, you're good, not this bit. You're going to watch and you'll be okay. And the first person who called on FaceTime was Tom, and he was just in tears. And then I just burst into tears. And then the phone didn't stop ringing for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
that's
then
beautiful.
Al Morgan, your nomination is historic in a real way. Did that hit you at the moment? Did you even were you too busy screaming for it to for that to register
No, I think on some level like that is the bigger reason of why I was screaming is that it's crazy that it's like I keep saying, it's all bigger than us. This show is bigger than us. The impact that it's going to have is bigger than us. And like, I'm still fully wrapping my feet around like the excitement of being able to be on Broadway. So like getting to actually just be standing on the stage and have that finally have happen, and getting to have that meeting that you've sort of dreamed of having. So the nomination, like, knocked me over. And like, because the thing is, like, there had been, I'm the dork that was looking at everything. I'm the dork that was like looking and reading and seeing all the like predictions and like what people were thinking and what they were going to say.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to get myself crazy about this, but how can I not? Because my name is popping up in predictions and like, what if this happens? Like, that would be so cool. Mm. And like, I don't even know how to take that. So then that morning it was like, okay, I tried to remember you, Jim, you told me what your friend told you. And I was like trying to remember you're going to be okay either way. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But part of me was like, God damn it. Like, y'all, like this is a big, not even just for me, but like, this is such a big deal for like so many people. If you could make that happen, like it's going to make somebody else feel like they can. It's going to make somebody else feel like it's even a possibility to exist in this business in a way that you can be seen or recognized. So to see them do it, that's, I think, the thing that made me sort of let out like a primal scream of some sort, because it was like, oh my God, like I can feel the shift from just that little moment in time caused like a shake in the ground in some ways.
Yeah. You were all in the Playwrights Horizons cast back in 2019 when the show premiered, but many of you have been involved in the project, attached to the project for quite a bit longer. And I wonder if you could just do a quick rundown from each of you about when you joined and kind of what the show even was at that time, because, you know, the show has grown and changed over the years, as I understand it. So, Antoine, I feel like we haven't heard from you much. When did you join the project?
I joined the year that Trump was elected. It was the Musical Theater Factory workshop in which Barbara Whitman, our head producer, also came on board. So that would be October 2016.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And what were you doing at the time? You were acting and performing and
I think
stuff?
I had just completed, I was working at New York Theater Workshop in the box office. I believe we were doing David Bowie's show. I had just completed Smokey Joe's Cafe, and by the grace of God, I was leaving the Ritz Club, and Michael R. Jackson stopped me. I swear to you, he stopped me, and he said, "You're Antoine Hopper," and I said, "Well, who are you?" And he said, "I'm Michael Jackson, the living one. I swear to you." And he says, "I just was speaking to Miss Affolter about you, and I got your information from Jason." Or he said something to that extent. And he said, "There's a reading and I have a rehearsal and it starts tomorrow and you should be getting an email." And literally as he ascended into the air, I got an email and it was for me to show up the next day.
I never heard this.
Yes, that's the crazy story. And I've talked about it with him, but that's how it happened in the next day. And that's the day I texted you, Jason, like, "Oh my God, Jason, thank you so much." And it's a blessing. So,
And Antoine, I always say that nothing good ever happens at the Ritz after midnight, and you have just debunked that.
And it was after midnight.
Oh, and at the Ritz.
Maybe debunked.
And so, Jason, then you must have been on board before 2016, then, if you had recommended.
I joined in April. I was informed by Michael, actually, 10 years to the day on opening night is when I joined. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago as Thought Five, I was recommended to Michael from a mutual friend. And he sent me an email saying, "Hey, can you come out audition for me?" And he sent me like 12 YouTube links of all of his songs. And he's like, "Watch them, watch them, watch them, watch them, watch them." And I was like, "All right." And I watched them. And I was just like, "Why is he so pressed? Like, what?" You know, so I get to this rehearsal room at NYU, and it's Michael. And we sit down and we talk. And I actually ended up never singing for him. He was basically like vetting me and trying to maybe see like my energy, because to that point he had experienced a lot of people kind of basically dropping out on him day of the concerts last minute, because they were either on a journey where they were ready to confront some things for themselves. At the time, there were some songs and moments that talked about a specific casting director in New York City. So a lot of people were afraid of messing up their career. I was crazy, so I wasn't really crazy. I wasn't really concerned about messing up my career by mentioning that person's name. So I was like, "Hell yeah, I'll do it." And that's how it happened. And from that point up until 2016, I'm going to call it now a version of Thought Six.
Yeah.
And then I went and did a gig, and then that's when Antoine came in and answered all their questions for that part, and the rest is history.
Okay, and so who's been with the show the longest then?
Jam.
Me.
All pointing. John, but, okay.
John Andrew.
Hi. Yeah, John Andrew,
So Michael and Molly Hager were the ones who, because as I know I've been singing periodically for a while, but I couldn't remember when. But it was October 1st, 2008. was the first time I performed periodically. And it was for a cabaret. Michael has these wonderful, like, trunk songs, these just one-off songs that are really brilliant. He used to do these cabarets called the Dirty Laundry Cabaret. And we were doing it at Ars Nova, and he asked me to sing the song. And at the time, he was a bit shy about public speaking. Now he is not. And so he asked me to, now he asked me if I would read some voicemails from his mom in between the songs. And I did. And so that was before there was a show. And then I think Playwrights Realm was the first thing that happened, and that was a very, very different version of the show. There was a white woman in the show, there was a white man in the show, there was, you know, a black cis woman in the show. So it was a whole other experience. And then when Brackett came on board, apparently he kept going, well, why do you have John Andrew do the mother? And he kept pressing Michael about that point. And and then that was when he suggested, well, what if it was all black queer bodies in the show? And apparently that opened some stuff up for Michael. And then when Musical Theater Factory started at the Porn Studio, I was invited back along with some of these people here and walked up the four flights of stairs in the cold studio and began this process.
Yeah, when was that for? I guess James, you were there as well.
Yeah,
for that 2015. You as well, L. Morgan. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Freezing.
Yeah, that was my first time and, too.
Freezing. Yeah.
And John Michael, when did you join?
I joined. I think it was 2019. Mm-hmm. For the last reading that the show did before it went into production at Playwright.
That's 2018.
And I had heard about it forever. Was it 18?
I think it was the end of 2018.
What I've been saying that
was
wrong
it?
And all the energy.
Did you do the last one? Did you do the last two?
Yeah, it was January.
Didn't you do the last two?
No, the last two.
I only did one reading at Playwrights, January. And then I did the choreography lab.
Well, damn.
No, okay.
So you really want us
y'all, that reading, if the production came up in the summer of 2019, that one that John Michael did was in September, and that was September of 2018.
Yep. There we go.
Right.
Before we went to Playwrights.
Mm. Right.
There we go.
Yeah, it had to be. But because,
well,
because
there
I remember,
you have it.
Yeah, because I remember there was, because Lyles' track had a couple different people in it right before Lyles.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for some of us, there was a little bit of a like, well, wait a minute. We loved Lyles, but we liked the last person. So now Lyles has to prove of why Lyles should be here.
But he proved it right away.
And then Lyles did that. And then Lyles did that reading. Like, it was like, for me, I was like the first day of rehearsal, like, We sang through one thing, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. he's toned. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
Because until then, I was like, who's this one? Who is this one?
And I'm just going to be I'm gonna be upfront about
that's
it. The
hilarious.
Person was Reese. Reese was in your part before.
Oh, my God, that's right.
And now Reese is also a part of the Strangely family.
Our company here on Broadway.
Yeah.
John Michaels of a feather. John Michaels of a feather.
That is true. That is true.
And Elijah. Wasn't Elijah three?
He was a three, he was a three.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of people who have played these parts in the history, in the
I
lore.
I feel bad. Yeah. John Michael, continue. I'm sorry. What were you done?
No, that's the story. Y'all told it better than I did. Because like I showed up, I didn't know anybody. I was like, I'm just here, like whatever. Y'all had a full.
We had been there for a very long time.
Right.
Can I say?
I was one
Gordon,
of those people.
John Michael does have the distinction. John Michael does have the distinction of being the only voice to have ever touched all of Michael's pieces.
Michael's shows are so specific and so unlike anyone else. And so like after you do just one developmental process with Michael, I'd be shocked if you aren't extremely curious as to what the fuck else are you working on? Because like your mind is so specific. And so with each opportunity, I was just so like, whoa, you are so wildly singular. Because all of his pieces are so fascinating and so unique. And with each concept, I'm like, even in development, even in the early stages, like I've been in one of Michael's pieces where it was just a treatment. Like, it was a one page, like, I think the story goes like this. And even then I was like, this is so fascinating. How did your brain arrive at this place?
Oh, weren't you in that early White Girl in Danger?
See what it becomes.
Where there wasn't really a script. And it was just like,
and that's going to be in production.
Here's what happens in this scene.
The improv.
Do something. Like, that's amazing. Yes.
It was giving plot. It was giving plot and like song ideas. And like, now it's like, it has grown so much. And like how he's able to execute that kind of storytelling growth all on his own. Not that like it's collaborative and that you're working with a director and actors and a team, but like as a writer, that like nucleus of an idea is going from like birth to conception just from his own mind.
Well, I think that's why
that's really special.
I think that's the soap opera thing in him. Like he does, there's elements in A Strange Loop that are very soap opera written. And I think he's good at keeping little tiny stories going for so long. And if you can get on the ride and just do your job on the ride, like you can be there for it. But his brain is utterly fascinating. As if you look at something like, how do you write that?
Yeah.
How do you come up with that as an idea to write? Because I would never be able to keep track of that.
Yeah. It's the way he's able to take like what would otherwise be just an exciting plot, but then he's like, okay, next step is how do I add like the icing on the cake being my own like personal meta exploration of a concept. So it's not just that things are happening. It's like, how can I make this about my human existence and my human journey and add that meta layer onto this story? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just a story happening. There's like, you can see him as a writer and as a human going on his own life journey as the piece is happening. And you can like chart that through his pieces. It's not just plot.
Yeah.
It's like so much, it like lifts itself outside of it.
Antoine, I feel like you looked like you were about to
say. I was just going to say a random fact about Lyles. We did a show a year before he joined. It was at the Atlantic, and I had mentioned to him, there's a show called A Strange Loop that you should audition for. Do you remember that? So it was crazy when
I do.
I was like,
I do.
My God. Just crazy. Yeah. Little known.
Well, and speaking of, none of us auditioned, right?
No. Praise God.
I know, because I think if we did, we probably
None
wouldn't have gotten
audition.
We probably wouldn't have gotten the part.
There was no.
I think we all did. No, we all did, because secretly, I know if I had fucked up, they would have all been like, no. And that's why I was really like, hi, everyone.
But that's not an audition.
Yes, it is.
I did what I had been told for all of this time. There's this guy, Michael R. Jackson. He writes these songs that are too much. They're too out there. They're offensive. You'll probably never get hired again if you do them. So me, I was like, I must sing all of this stuff immediately. So when he asked me, because yes, someone dropped out because they were too afraid, I was like, I will be there at 2. And I showed up ready. I had rehearsed. I don't need you to plunk the thing out. I will learn it myself. I will show up. And I was prepared and able. And so we were able to just we rehearsed for 15, 20 minutes, but then we could sit and talk about The Young and the Restless, or we could sit and talk about Days of Our Lives because we connected as like human beings. The work got done because he wrote so well and I was prepared.
Yeah.
But I think the audition process was like, oh, we actually get along? Like, let's talk about that and let's build from there.
I'll have more with the 6 thoughts of A Strange Loop right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And now, here's more with the thoughts of A Strange Loop.
James, that actually leads me to my next question, which is, do all of you have a sense of the ways in which, because this piece has, you know, grown over the years, do you have a sense of the ways in which your individuality as performers and as humans has sort of informed the way the thoughts have developed and the way they work and the
I
way...
We're in so much of this piece, I think, in so many ways. We've done workshops where we just sat around and talked about our feelings or talked about what was going on versus sitting there reading the script or singing the songs. Down to what some of us are even wearing. Like I'm dressed the way I'm dressed because that's how James dressed. Yeah. Like, oh, we don't know what to put James in as a costume. Do you see what he's wearing? Just put him in something like that. Like, we're so much of who we are is really in the foundation of this piece in such a cool way.
And also, I mean, like, Michael knows my singing voice better than I even know it. I literally in this show sing the lowest note in my range that's possible and the highest note in my range that's possible.
That's so shady, though.
But also he can sing them himself. Michael, Michael Jackson could sing all of our parts.
It's true. It's true.
And it's very clear because he came for me in this last score.
That's true.
He wrote something crazy for us, but then nobody could sing it.
That's true.
So then we had to take it.
That's actually true.
Gordon, what I would offer to that are three things. The first thing is, this isn't me just talking, but I've never really been, no, I don't think I've ever been in a room full of actors who are also directors themselves. It's refreshing. If there was a course of dramaturg, they should come to a rehearsal of A Strange Loop. Even this last iteration, watching Auntie, who is James Jackson Jr., I call him Auntie. Watching Auntie make a scene that honestly didn't work since playwrights work, and it actually worked because he spoke up. And the second thing I wanted to bring up is that Michael welcomes it. And how blessed we are to now have 6 years together, or 4, and he literally welcomes us and knows that we will self-direct, I mean, not self-direct, but bring things to the table, and he will enhance and use it, and he welcomes that language in the room so that, our DNA is in this and intertwined, and he respects us and trusts us, and it's refreshing. And the third thing I forgot.
You forgot.
The room is very open to conversation. Mm-hmm. I think they're, at the end of the day, they're going to tell the story that they want to tell, but they are open to conversations around us, around the things that speak to you in the room, which is helpful.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they are going to tell the story that they intend on telling.
I will also say that, like, it doesn't, yes, our DNA is in it, but for me, it wasn't a conscious thing. It never really felt like, well, this shit's based on
me. Right, right, right.
Like, you know, but when I think about it, you know, people ask us all the time, and I think I reminded myself that when I look at, like, certain things, I forget, because it's such a free room and we all know each other and how to work with each other. There were so many things that I'm like, oh, that's in there, because I did do that in rehearsal one day. And then Mike was just like, it's
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you know, like, for some reason, I remember, like, my line saying coon. I remember being like, no, that was that was written. And then Michael goes, no, you just
you
did
said
that.
It one day.
And I was just like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's so many things. I mean, we're not coming in with pages of being like, my right, got right, an right. idea. But we'll just, like, you know, try something, and next you know it's in.
If you say it long enough, the script will change.
Enhances.
It's true.
And I think the thing that further
No, well, what would you say during We Want to Know when you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's Jason. Right.
That's a
Jason line.
And I think it's further enhanced now that we have a beautiful quartet of covers. It's enhancing it now because now that they're teaching the show to other people, I always looked at, we all have our features and those are our characters, but it's really, now that they're putting it onto other people, it enhances even more how much we are our mm-hmm. thought. Thought mm-hmm. six is Antoine. Mm-hmm. Thought one is El Morgan, and not in such a copywritten way, but the essence that's truly what it is.
Yeah, there's like
and
a
that's
spirit,
a hard thing for
a spirit connection.
That's a hard thing for a lot of actors to go into. So I like what our understudies are doing is utterly amazing. It's absolutely amazing because actors don't get asked often to be so much of themselves or to expose so much of themselves. They want, especially in an understudy situation, they're just like, fill in the hole, just do what the other person does. And to be asked to bring parts of yourself to the table is so special and difficult.
I will say that.
Yeah, because it would read false if they tried to be us.
I will say that I think we all met Michael's writing because Michael's writing was so honest. And I remember in like one of the book workshops when, you know, we're looking at these scenes and we spent like a whole week just looking at the book. And we talked about our feelings. And it just felt like, oh, this doesn't feel like acting. This feels very much like he has taken an experience that many of us have had and has written it very honestly. And so we were also able to bring our full selves to it because there was nothing false about the writing. You know, there's so many times when, like, you get things and you're like, well, I'm going to make this work. And there was really, you know, very few times, if any, where you walked into anything and you're like, well, I got to make this work because it rang false or it wasn't truthful in some way. And that I will say is how I was able to like bring myself to it because like the writing was honest and I was like, oh, I know what this feels like. I know what it's like to have a overbearing mom. I know like, I mean, like all of it was like, oh, I get it. This is honest. Mm-hmm. This is the truth.
Very much so.
And what has it been like between Playwrights Horizons and then you had a run at Woolly Mammoth sort of pre-Broadway? You got a new lead performer who, you know, we were talking about, you know, new people joining the cast. What was it like to have a new person suddenly to center around and how does what Jaquel is doing differently?
He's such a little sweet face. He's such a little sweet face. And so from the moment like he walked into the door, I wanted to take care of him. Right?
Yeah.
Like from the first moment he walked in, I said, oh my God, he's a little sweet, like a little sweet baby. Like when Amber Ruffin was calling him like the sweet baby on her show, I was like, that's how I felt. And it only enhanced how difficult and horrible this journey was that he was going on. And like, you know, I remember at one point in time, I was like, you're so sweet, honey. I'm about to fuck you up on the stage. I'm like, let's go. You know? I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Welcome to a strange.
You're so sweet. And you're the sweetest thing. I'm about to like fuck up your life. Okay, let's do the scene. You know what I mean? It's like... But he was really just wonderful and open-hearted and just a joy and a pleasure to work with, really.
He's a rare...
One of my favorite...
Go ahead.
I was going to say one of my favorite moments with Jaquel was we were walking home together and his housing was like in the 50s. So we had to walk through Times Square. Jam, you were there. And, you know, anybody who's lived in New York long enough, like, Times Square, 8th Avenue between like 34 and 54 is hell. Nobody wants that. And so we get to the heart of hell. And Jaquel is like, wow, I never get sick of my walk home. These lights are so beautiful. And I was like, no, he must be lying. I was like, there's no way, there's no way. But his joy was so honest. And I was like, this sweet little cherub enjoying Times Square. Like, there's people shooting up.
Wasn't there like a street fair? I think there was a street fair or something like that.
Oh,
a street fair. I'm like, get me out of here. And Jaquella's like, the so lights cute. Of Broadway.
That's so cute because that's not like that, man.
Right.
It didn't take long. Right. It didn't take long. Yeah.
It didn't take long.
You know, one of the things that I remember noticing first about Jaquel was, you know, there's this layer of this like angel baby face that we love so much. But immediately I also saw this person who knows what they're giving and knows that they're a ferocious talent, that they have something to offer. In a way that is similar to Usher, but also not similar to Usher. Jaquel is this angel baby-faced young man who also knows that he's the shit. And because of that, it has allowed him to sustain and be on this journey in a fantastic way, because I feel like that part of him, which is so not Usher, allows him to go into that journey 8 shows a week and be okay.
I think, you know, I don't know if...
So I knew that he was going to be okay. I knew he was going to be okay, because I was just like, he's grateful to be here, but also understands why he is here.
And he's not afraid to ask questions.
To Jason's point, it never came off as like arrogance about like being the shit. What I was impressed was like, this like 23-year-old knows how to set boundaries in a way that other people, I have never, like when I was 23 years old and someone said, do this, I'd go, oh yeah, sure. And like, they would go, and he would like, I'm going to have to think about that and think about if I'm ready to do that or how I want to do that.
Right.
And like
he
advocated for himself in the most delicious and wonderful way. And I was like, oh, the babies are going to be all right. They know how to set boundaries. In like, I had to go through hell to learn how to do that. And he stepped into this room and was like,
yeah, I didn't know how to say no to that.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was very good about that.
Yeah.
And then I think that makes...
I keep saying he's been a gift to the piece because he's asking, he came into the show and started asking questions of Michael and of the team that they had not had before, because he's able to stand outside of this and actually look in at, well, if this, then that makes Usher this. Right. If this, then that makes Usher this. What exactly is the Usher that we're trying to create in this piece? And it was really lovely watching him challenge them and like make them have to think, because they've gotten so used to sort of the same sort of lens on the role over the years that they hadn't had an opportunity to have someone who is genuinely 23, 24 years old today asking these questions. And I think the piece only grew as a result of that.
Yeah.
And I think he also came into a group that also was enhanced by the fact that he came into a group that also knows how to advocate for themselves individually. So I think that probably, I would imagine that made him feel even more comfortable that he could do that, that he was amongst company. And I think we all made it very clear to him. They're like, wait, yo, whatever you need, let us know.
Yeah, he's a great collaborator in a way that like, he just graduated. So he's so wonderfully, beautifully trained, you know? But he, it's so... To have like an actual like really,
he holds
right. Like to watch that happen is like, he's not jaded by anything. I absolutely like, I learn from him, and I'm twice his age, and it's a pleasure every single day. It's an absolute pleasure.
And so you're all in the middle of this Tony hype, and Tony Knight will be here, you know, before you know it. What do you all think about what's next for each of you? You know, you're all in the show for the foreseeable future, but how do you all think about what's coming up next for you?
Everything.
What would you like to do?
I want to. Can I?
I have a specific thing.
Yeah. Tell me, John Andrew.
I had to choose between either this or an ensemble track in the upcoming production. And so when this came to Broadway, the Notebook, they got postponed due to COVID, and they were going to like go in September. And I remember I called my agent. I was like, do you think maybe I can still do the Notebook in September? And he went, I think your life is going to be very different in September. And I was like, well, I don't know that. I mean, it's a job, and you know, right. And he's like, I think you're not going to have to worry about that one. Probably say no. So honestly, I don't know what the next thing is going to be, but I think it's going to be exciting. You know,
yeah, so I don't like oysters, but I think the world is ours.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely people who are fancy who are talking to us in a way that, and looking at us, that I'm like, oh, you all never talked to me that way before in my life.
Yeah, people look at you funny. Mm-hmm.
It's truly, yeah. It's truly exciting to know that, like, you know, with all of our investment that we all in the six of us have put into this piece, it's very exciting to see the well earned and deserved momentum and options that come for my five colleagues. I love seeing the world figure out or finally come to the fact that there are these stars before them. And so I think that part of the benefit of us being on this Broadway stage now is that we kind of get some kickback on our investment. And if that means opportunities upon opportunities upon opportunities for these five people in front of me, that's exactly what they deserve and they should get and more.
And you.
Oh, yes. that's assumed. I want everything. but that being said, I think the cool thing will be watching the tributaries and branches of our careers be able to expand more because of this thing that we invested in and kept saying yes to, as opposed to getting cast in.
And there have been plenty of seeds planted sort of throughout the process of all of this that I think what's happening to the show is only going to help make those seeds blossom even more
fully. I completely agree.
So there are things on the burner.
Yeah.
For all of you, I imagine.
Yeah.
Exciting things on the burner.
Yeah.
What are you each most looking forward to on Tony Night? I'm going to go around the room. Antoine, you're first up on my screen.
To performing. Are we able to? Yes, to performing. That's going to be fun. That's always been a dream. I will say that I've always been saying since Playwrights, when we do our little rehearsals, I always throw in, and we'll be right back after these messages, like after we do Felching and Coming, those lyrics, I can see them going straight to a commercial. So I look forward to that, and I just am very excited. I know for a fact that brown and queer people in general, everyone's going to be looking at this performance as iconic as a Jennifer Holliday, and I'm very proud to be a part of it, and I'm very proud to share that everyone up on that stage walks the walk and talks the talk, and integrity is at the forefront, and that is a good thing to know, that we are nothing but love, and we are honest, and we're about the craft. So I'm excited to share that.
I'm excited to just be in that room of all of that. It's weird. You know, I think I was talking to Jen Schriever, our lighting designer, recently, since the nomination things. And we were both saying, like, I used to look at the Tonys as something that was for them. Like, it was these people that I put somewhere, whether it's a pedestal or wherever, but I put them. It was definitely a them that had nothing to do with me at all. And that the them is now including us. feels really cool. It really does. So I'm just excited to be, I'm not putting anyone on any sort of pedestal. I'm not even putting myself on a pedestal. I just want to be in a space that I have like held so high for so long. I want to be amongst that energy. And then I want to shine it back on like anyone else who's put us somewhere up like that. I want to let people know like the air is okay up here. And there's space for y'all, so come too. Does that make sense? Yeah. I just want to go and feel that energy. So I want to be in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. John Andrew, do you have anything to add?
You know, I'll be okay if I win. I'll be okay if I don't. And it's okay to want it. Mm-hmm. I hope to just go and be as present as I can be and remember to eat.
It's a long night.
So far in this, you know, El Morgan and I did this Tony nominee press junket thing, and like we hit the ground running, and I was like, oh, there is no time to eat anything. We're running all day, and it was like 2 o'clock, and I was like, I am starving. I hope I remember to eat and just enjoy the day. And, you know, it's okay. I'll be okay no matter what. And
you're already okay.
It'll be great. If I get it, it'll be great. If I don't, and it's okay if I want it.
Yeah. John Michael, what about you?
I'm excited for the party in a lot of ways. I feel like we've been on a treadmill with this show at least since like October of last year. I mean, I could explain how it's been a treadmill since Playwrights, mm-hmm. but we all had a pandemic and we're still in it. And then when we went to DC, we were like, okay, hopefully this means we get to go to Broadway. Hopefully that's what this means. And there was Omicron and we were like doing the show against all odds, just trying to make it through. Then we made it through. We're putting it up on its feet. And yes. then like a bunch of people get COVID, but we open anyway, we're doing previews. And then it's like, we make it to opening, but you can't have a party because COVID is still happening. So we're like, and then they're like, great, it's well received. So now we have to do a bunch of press stuff. So it's like, we're still on the treadmill and it's all very exhilarating and exciting. And to me, at least for now in my mind, it feels like the night of the Tonys means that like we get a legitimate moment to stop
and be celebrated.
And celebrate the sprint that we just did, the marathon that we just did. And we all get to be together and toast to like how far we've come. Because we haven't really been able
at all
to truly celebrate many victories.
There was a Pulitzer in a pandemic.
Yeah.
We've never gotten to celebrate a thing.
Like so, which is not true, but that's just how it feels. So yeah, I'm with you. I want to be in very uncomfortable shoes in your presence.
Jason, what about you?
John Andrew Morrison and El Morgan Lee winning the Tony. That's right.
I look forward to that. And El Morgan, what about you?
In so many ways, I feel like, honestly, I've already won everything that means the most to me at this point with this project and with this whole ride. Because even getting a nomination was like crazy, and I'm still in slight disbelief. I'm slowly coming out of that disbelief but I was trapped in that for a bit. I think the biggest thing that I'm excited about is the dress, that is a subject that is ongoing and that I'm finding a little bit more about every day. I'm very excited. Number two, the biggest thing is I'm with you, Lyles. The moment that like all of us actually get to like sit in front of each other and look at each other's faces and go, we did this. Like this is ours to celebrate. This is it. Like we reached that sort of top of the hill that we didn't know was going to even happen.
Well, congratulations to all of you on the show's success, and I can't wait to see you all on the stage at the Tonys. Thanks so much for joining me, all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Gordon.
That was Antoine Hopper, James Jackson Jr., L. Morgan Lee, John Michael Lyles, John Andrew Morrison, and Jason Vesey, now appearing on Broadway in A Strange Loop.
Morrison, Lee, and the rest of the show were nominated in a total of 11 categories at the Tony Awards on June 12th. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft, or give us a shout out on social media. Find past episodes and subscribe on all the pod places, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next time, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.